What attracted me to the Baroque music was really in the beginning some people that I knew that were exploring something that was very new. It seemed to fit my voice type much better than the other choices when you're at university or conservatory, which are to go into opera. I don't have that kind of big voice. And so doing the Baroque performance was of interest to me. Also, it's much more studious. It takes a musicology to perform this music because, at least when I started, and it's still true today, so much of the music is not published. So I was taught to read from original manuscript, to read in French Baroque clef. So in our Western music, we have treble clef and bass clef, but there are a lot of other clefs that exist, and not many singers that come through the university are taught that kind of skill. So I think what attracted me too then was the beauty of the music. It is so expressive. It is so delightful. It has a lightness to it. And many people think of Baroque music only as being Handel or Bach, but what my expertise became was the early 1600s. So early Italian music, French Baroque music, which is, thought to be a little bit later.
This might seem like a bit of a tangent, but I recently read an article that human language and human nomenclature is very rapidly condensing and becoming like a single unit. And that feels very similar to how music has been functioning in the Western world. But to hear that, French treble or French clefs were the language that was written for Baroque was written in so many different languages and so many different structures that it's so important to keep that alive and to recognize and to celebrate the differences and the evolution of music.
It's a very interesting point. Not only the language, but the styles were quite unique. So if we think of classical music, we might think of Haydn and Mozart. In Baroque music, we have to think Italian Baroque versus French Baroque, which has different requirements for execution. So a French Baroque trill is not the same as an Italian Baroque trill. So there were different developments in different parts of Western Europe, basically. The other thing that's very interesting and many people don't realize is that pitch was not standardized. So right now, if you go to a piano and it's in tune, the A that you play is at 440 hertz per seconds, I guess. And in Baroque pitch, for instance, Seicento performs at 415. It happens to be a half step lower. That is because the instruments are at that tuning. And why can't they just transpose and play up? Because the structure of the instrument had that pitch. So a Baroque flute is at 415. And there are other pitches as well that could be higher or lower. Different little towns in Europe had different pitches. And we know that because of the way the organ was tuned or because somebody discovered a consort of recorders that were tuned to a different pitch.
There are so many elements of ourselves and society and history and music specifically that to really fully appreciate them, it takes an encompassing depth of understanding the history and understanding the politics and the structures behind it, the science behind it. And it's so beautiful that Baroque is the medium that you've chosen to really express that love and that depth.
Well, I love the period. I love the fact that as a singer, one of the goals is to accomplish expression through the words. So, as we got into the 1600s, there was a bit of a revolt against the old music, which is what we call Renaissance music, because the words were not understood. So, if you think about polyphony, which would be your Palestrina, other composers that were in that late 1500s era, the words often overlapped. And so there was a movement to pay more attention to the words, and therefore there was what we call word painting. And it was extremely important to determine your presentation of a text, and not just the overall text, but the specific words or the phrase of the text in a certain way. So it's not just happy or sad, but it's what did the word evoke? And this is so important even in Bach, which is late Baroque. In Bach, we have this expressive word painting, Seicento yesterday did an educational outreach for the Arts Hub in Lafayette, and one of the demonstrations was a recitative, which is recitative is a form that is in the St. John Passion, which is very much more spoken than sung. So if you think about your aria, that's one type of singing, and the words are poetic and rhyme, and there's a structure to it. But recitative is really just taking any text and singing it to words and having some punctuating chords in it. And one of the recitatives in the St. John is when the evangelist is crying, basically, and the expression with the music is just so strong that it, without even understanding the words, if you hear it, you know that it's very tragic. Something very sad has happened. And Bach does that with a sort of chromatic do-do-do-do-do-do. It's got this series of chromatic phrases, and I didn't sing the exact right notes. Somebody will hear that and go, that's not it. But there are these, this sequence of chromatic phrasing, and then the way that it's sung brings the audience almost to tears. It's such a such an emotional moment.
So choral painting beneath the soloist singing their piece.
Yeah, the soloists have the biggest responsibility in that particular one. It's just the solo tenor who is the narrator for this St. John Passion. We call him the evangelist. It happens to be a tenor voice, which was a tradition that Bach did not begin. There were several other passions that tell the story of the crucifixion by other composers that Bach was following in a tradition of.
Let's touch on St. John's Passion, which is what Seicento Baroque Ensemble will be performing next week. So this, you had mentioned that Bach was continuing along a line of composing a passion based on the biblical crucifixion story.
Yes, and it evidently is a tradition that goes back to the 13th century with priests giving the responsibility of chanting the story of the Passion. And it, the way I understand it is that the priest then, various priests had different roles. So there would be a priest that was the evangelist or the narrator progressing the story and taking the text, in the case of this, right out of the Gospel of John. There would be a priest playing the part of Jesus, a priest playing the part of Pontius Pilate and other characters. So it was somewhat developed, the format of having the chorus and soloists before Bach, and then Bach took it that much further by including some different chorales, which are basically hymns, and that he took a hymn that might have been from the middle of the 1600s and harmonized it with his more complicated, more difficult harmonization. I think of the connection between this and musical theater, where if you have a song in Oklahoma, the song doesn't just begin with the comment on, you know, oh, what a beautiful morning, but it starts out with a sort of introductory part. And that is reflective of what we have in oratorio, where you have a recitative, which progresses the action. You have the aria, which is more reflective of what's just happened. The action is not moving. It's just the singer singing about their emotions of what happened. You have the choruses in the St. John Passion. They're fabulous because the choir is the crowd. They are the very angry crowd. They're the upset high priests. They're playing different characters. And a lot of times in the St. John, and this is why the work can be considered controversial, the crowd is a little bit too angry. Bach, in fact, did a great job. And the criticism of the St. John Passion is that it is anti-Semitic. So there's an issue with that that we're trying to address as well. So we had the recitative telling the story, the aria reflecting on the story, and the choruses being part of the story. And then you have these chorales, these traditional Lutheran chorales, which Bach carefully chose maybe verse 3 of a chorale. And think of a hymn as a chorale. And then he harmonized in such exquisite ways that actually Bach was criticized for his chorales because the congregation said, they're too hard to sing with. You've changed them too much. Instead of having this melody that we've sung for centuries, you've added extra notes. So he had some criticism for his setting of the chorales, which we think of as beautiful.
I assume that that would add an extra complication to any performance, either back then or now, is finding the right tools to do the job justice. And as a matter of fact, finding these right tools is something that Seicento's super proud of for this particular production of St. John's Passion.
Yes, and the tools include the instrumentalist as well as the instruments. So Seicento is the first group in Colorado to bring this work to Colorado with period instruments. And why is this important? Because these are the instruments that Bach wrote for. For instance, Bach did not write for the piano because it didn't exist. He wrote for the Baroque violin, he wrote for the Baroque oboe, for the oboe da caccia, for the Baroque bassoon. They're different instruments. What Seicento is trying to do, bringing in these instruments, is a couple of things are important here. This is our mission, is to perform music as it was performed at the time it was written. So we always use the old instruments. The Baroque flute, for instance, is wooden. Sounds quite different from the modern flute, which is made of metal. It's much warmer. We have the pitch issue. We have the pitch issue, which is that we play at 415 instead of 440, and that changes the sound. The Baroque violins and Baroque violas are not as high strung, if you will. There are changes in the instrument. The fingerboard is lower. There's not a chin rest, so they're not grasping the instrument. And really important is that the bow is quite different. The bow is shorter, and instead of being sort of square like this, it's a bit round, more rounded, and it plays differently. The modern bow plays from tip to frog, this kind of the same sound. The Baroque bow has a strength in the middle of the bow, and it gives it this yeah sound. And so then the oboes are different. We are using a theorbo. A theorbo is a very large lute with a long neck so that it has bass notes. Many of these players have to be brought in. For instance, there are no professional level Baroque oboists that I know of in the state. So Seicento has to import our instrumentalist. And we're bringing in a countertenor, which is a male alto. Alto is often sung with a woman, but in this case, it's a male alto to replicate the sound, again, that Bach would have written for men, not for women. And the sound of Roger Isaac's voice is just gorgeous. He is from South Africa. He lives in Washington, D.C., and he's my colleague for many years. And I just wanted to bring in a countertenor. But Roger will bring something to this performance that is unlike any other, again, unique to Seicento's performance of it, presentation of it.
Because I would assume that not only do you need the skill, but you need the expertise and the weight to bring to it as a piece as well.
I love this point. To play the Baroque instruments, for instance, you have to have studied that instrument. I can't tell you how several people have told me, including a conductor once told me, well, let's just bring in the instruments. Let's just put a Baroque violin in the modern violinist's hands and have them play it. Or let's put the Baroque bassoon in a bassoonist's hands, and it's not the same instrument. It's more than just playing on this wooden flute instead of a metal flute. It really is a technique for the instrument, but also I would say that every Baroque instrumentalist who has studied this is also a musicologist. You have to be. I was trained so that we were reading the treatises that were written in the 1600s and the 1700s. You're reading about what was said about what should the voice sound like? What should an ornament be like? What should a trill be like? When do I do this? When do I do that? And it's really much, much more than just playing the music in the same old way on a new instrument. Add to that, the singers in the choir, I am asking to do much more than a modern choir might do performing this same work. So there are certain ways that we phrase. There's certain ways that we use word painting for the text. And there are certain things like a trill, even, that many choirs won't attempt a trill with a whole section doing the same trill. A trill being dum, da-dum, like that. How do you do that in a section of 9 singers? But Seicento is doing that. Partly, I have to say, because I was trained as a singer that way, so I can give that information to our singers. I can tell them how not to do something in a modern way and how to do it in a more Baroque way to match the instruments, really.
So the culmination of all of this work will be happening next week. It kicks off May 5th. It'll be in Arvada. On the 6th, it'll be in Denver. And then on the 7th, it'll be in Boulder. For more information about Seicento Baroque Ensemble, as well as about this particular piece, St. John's Passion, where can people go?
We have a website. It's called seicentobaroque.org. So S-E-I-C-E-N-T-O, Baroque, B-A-R-O-Q-U-E.org. And on that, we will have some information about the work. I've also put together, instead of having a pre-concert talk, we're having a pre-concert video, and that is being made available, especially to ticket holders. But if anybody else wants to see it, they're welcome to, and that would be from our website.
Well, we are speaking with Yvan Brown, the artistic director of the Seicento Baroque Ensemble. Yvan, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure, and I hope we see a lot of people at the concerts. Thank you.